This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight we have another great show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality. We're going to deal with how life varies itself and how is it that one kind of life is one way and another kind of life is another way. And I think I'm going to give out some ideas about this. Of course, you can call in if you're interested in contributing or in asking questions or whatever you like might want to say about anything dealing with metaphysics and spirituality. And you can reach us at 877-876-5227 in the U.S. If you're in Canada, 888-815-9756. Okay, so I always like to describe in a kind of definitive way what I mean by life. And let me start with that. To me, life is anything that can take in things around it, we'll call it energy, and change it in some way, we'll call it metabolize, and then usually expel it at some other point in its cycle of living. And when it does this, it is exchanging not only energy, but it's actually exchanging, we call it, parts of the universe that are not so obvious. And I'll explain that as we go on. Also, life generally can reproduce itself. In other words, it can make more of what it is. So that's what I mean when I talk about life. A lot of people say, well, it's why life is. What is life? You know, okay, well, I gave you my definition there, so to speak. And why is there a variability in life? What is life here to do? And I'll tell you this, if you've been listening to the show, you probably know from past shows that, in my opinion, life is the growth of its own creator. It's there for that purpose. And you might say, well, then what about all those little microbes and everything else? How are they growing the creator if the creator is like God? How does God grow because there's little pieces of this or that running around? Well, you see, life is really a multidimensional type of development, and it is free to grow, and because it's free to grow, it has to start off very, very, very minimal. Because if it doesn't start at almost the smallest level possible, its freedom is impinged on by whatever would create it outside of itself. So you've got to start off small. And you got to have all those microbes, which are more of life on this planet, at least, than any other thing, really. And you got to have a lot of that, because that's how you keep freedom in the system, how something becomes self-created. Otherwise, you would have God creating everything, almost, if it was creating all the little things, the low things, without those things being involved in any way within their own creation. So it's an interesting process. Now, I'll also mention this, that in the lower kingdoms below human, that's us, life actually is evolved through, that's, I'm using the big E word, evolved through forces. The forces are imposed by conflicts between one part of life and another. And the reason it works this way is because these parts of life do not directly recognize the Creator in themselves and in others. And since they don't recognize the Creator at their level of development, they don't have a sense to be able to do that, actually, and then they don't have consciousness to be able to understand it. So once this happens at that level, the results are that instead of growing because they want to be more like their creator, they grow because they want to be more like themselves, which is actually a very separative way of existence. It separates them from everything else because they're in conflict to some extent with everything else, at least anything that's much different from what they are. And we call that evolution. Some people do, anyway. But it isn't the evolution that is typically espoused by many biologists and life scientists, because it only includes lower life. And even some elements of that lower life may not completely respond. what I just described. So when you get to life like us, we can sense our Creator through two senses that we have. And I'm going to get deep into this in the show today about how life is really defined and changed by how it can sense around itself. But the important thing to understand here is that we are significantly different because we only are evolutionary when we don't use our senses to model ourselves after our Creator and to also to become a greater part of and to help grow the Creator in ourselves and in others. So when we don't do that, then we end up in this evolutionary model where, guess what, there's forces in our life. And I mean big forces that create all kinds of problems for us and others. But it's an interesting thing that we don't have to live that way because we are a bit different. But that we're going to get to that later in the show. For right now, I want to start off with the most basic things, like those little microbes, and talk about how the most basic elements of life exist and then differentiate, and then also how they vary from one thing to another. Because there is basic recipes, you can say, basic things about what life is about that we can talk about, and then I can try to bring some understanding, hopefully, to some of you out there. Okay, so if we take the very basic, the most basic type of microbial form of life, I mean, this is like a proto-bacteria or even virus, although bacteria may have come before viruses, but that's another issue. When we look at how life develops, its very first ability is to sense something outside of itself that it is going to use within itself and somewhat metabolize or change and then give off. And when it does this, it has to have a sense. It has to have some sense of whatever it is that it is using. Even if it's sunlight, it has to have some sense to be able to capture and use this whatever we're talking about, because it can be a lot of different things. So microbial life is a life form that does this in usually one or two different ways. And it starts off with one. And it has usually one center that does this semi-completely or completely, and then maybe a couple other centers, or I call them centers, we can call them senses at the same time, that does it incompletely. Now, this is a little bit complicated. When I talk about a center, for those of you who are more metaphysically endowed and who are interested in metaphysics, that part is really, we're talking about chakras. We're talking about something that is not just a sense in a physical way, but also electromagnetically chakras. And also, as you move up from, we'll say, microbial life to eventually plant life, plants actually have sense, at least the beginning of sense, in the astral realm, another dimension of time and space more complicated than this one, where they can even sense some level of feeling. Now, we don't usually think of plants as having feelings, but they actually can feel some things that are a little bit like our feelings, but our feelings are much more intense, much more developed, because we have a lot more sense in the astral world than what a plant would have. Microbes may be lacking this because they're not fully developed into what we'll say a completed life form. They're kind of in between being non-life or pre-life, which is like a mineral, and being almost a plant, or in some cases, even an animal. But they are sort of stuck in between, and life begins in this in-between state. We'll call it the kind of shadow realm, where it isn't completely functioning in ways that higher than microbial life lives. For billions of years, billions, that's with a B, the big B word, life in this world from about, I know some people think it's 3.5, but it's probably over 4 billion years ago, to probably less than a billion years ago, life was just microbial in some fashion. Isn't that amazing? So in other words, for way, way longer than there has been anything other than microbial life on Earth, there was just microbial life on Earth. So talk about taking a long time to develop itself, life did. And some of the life that was created is of such an unusual nature that we just discovered that it exists, called extremophiles, you know, extreme life, that is microbial in nature, but lives in places we didn't think life could sustain itself, as much as 250 to 270 degrees Fahrenheit. That's pretty hot, let me tell you. That's hotter than steam. And it could even live maybe in hotter places, we don't know. Some life, listen to this, can live like in the middle of a nuclear reactor. They're called nuclear or radioactive file life. They actually live off of nuclear energy. Sounds impossible, I know, but it's true. Yeah, they actually get some of their energy from nuclear power. They actually take in nuclear energy and they expel byproducts of nuclear energy. That's how they survive. You probably haven't heard of this because a lot of this stuff is kind of new. It's only been discovered in the last few years. And it's not like probably being taught yet, like in most biology classes or whatever. Yeah. So we have all kinds of strange life forms, to say the least. And these are microbials. These are life forms that have managed to survive the very, very worst circumstances that Earth has ever gone through, and including the possibility of having collided with some really colossal things, even possibly a planetoid the size of nearly Mars at some point, over 4 billion years ago at least. And maybe there was even life here before that. Another thing that's very interesting is some of the life that's on Earth came from outer space. Seriously. Yeah. Now, I'm not talking about, you know, lizard people coming from whatever. I know some people think that, and there's people that actually espouse that. But I'm talking about, these are just microbial life forms that have actually come from other worlds, and maybe even the very first microbial life forms on Earth did come from the tails of comets or asteroids or some other source outside of this world. Maybe some of them also came from Mars. Hard to understand and believe. Maybe some of them even came from Venus, although right now nobody believes Venus ever had life on it. But I think it's important for us to be open-minded about this, because life forms are made specifically to grow the Creator in the most unusual and difficult places, especially in this dimension of time and space. Ultimately, the plan, in my opinion, now this is my opinion, is to grow life everywhere. I mean, like, everywhere that there is a potential at all. And what, I don't know what that potential is. I don't know where the limits are. But way beyond what we conceive of normally here in this world, life can grow. It was only 20, 30 years ago they discovered that life grows in the bottom of the oceans and vents that come out of the volcanoes and underneath the ocean. These vents are superheated steam, and they have all kinds of minerals in them, and the life grows from the minerals coming out and also from the heat. Incredible stuff. And there's even giant worms down there, like just 6 feet long and kind of unusual-looking things. I'm talking about some really strange stuff has been discovered that most people aren't that aware of, really. Okay, so life has an incredible job, you might say. That's just to try to fill every niche possible, especially in the dimension of time and space we live in, to diversify and to use the tremendous heterogeneity of possible environments for life to live in this dimension. No dimension of time and space is more heterogeneous. That means that it has differences in itself as much as the dimension that we live in, which is called the etheric, dense physical, or some people prefer the electromagnetic, dense physical dimension of time and space. Now, some of you have heard me talk about the astral or the monastic or mental dimension. Those dimensions have more homogeneity in terms of their, we'll call it structure, and the physics within them. And although you can be very creative and create many, many unusual things there, overall, life has less niches to live in than it does in this dimension, honestly. Yeah. So see, this is like the place of maximum diversity, but also maximum struggle and difficulty in life to grow and live, especially true for those things that are below humans in development. Oh, isn't that interesting? And we're going to talk a lot more about that when we come back from our break, which is going to be for about 2.5 to 3 minutes from right now.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
The following statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. ViroPel is a dietary supplement. It is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Colds and flu are a problem that many want answers and alternatives for. Let me tell you about ViroPel, a certified all-organic herbal and nutraceutical formula designed to support relief from symptoms of cold and flu. With so much concern about potential bird flu outbreaks, there may be some help. ViroPel's patents include proven immune enhancement, adding significant preventative and other immune system benefits. In effectiveness trials, most experienced relief from symptoms in 2 to 3 days. Think about how long your last flu symptoms lasted. Incredible and amazing are the words most often used to describe the effects of ViroPel. Using 136 of the highest grade ingredients in a new science gives ViroPel its effectiveness. Relief could be just 1 to 3 days away. To learn more or to purchase ViroPel, call Alternative Health Approaches at 800-777-7850. That's 800-777-7850. Or visit ViroPel, that's ViruPel.org.
Well, we're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight, besides talking in general about metaphysics and spirituality, we're talking about the variability within life and how does that work itself out. What is it that makes life so different from one type of life to another? And I thought that this would be an interesting topic because many people have that question. If there's time, by the end of the night, I'll talk a little bit about other planets. I know that some people have questions about that. I'll try to cover life as we're familiar with for the most of the time in today's show, but somewhat we'll talk about life as it might exist elsewhere. And there are millions, millions, billions, trillions of other planets, and those planets, some of them have physical life like us. That doesn't mean they all look exactly like us, but there is life in the same general realm of kingdoms. In other words, there's microbial life, there's plant life, there's animal life, and there's human life, and there's life beyond humans, too. So we'll talk about that as well. Okay, so if we're looking at microbes, going back to the very beginning of this process, they are developing one center or sense either way you want to describe it, because the center is kind of, to me, the electromagnetic part, and the sense is usually in physical thing, an organ that is within the microbe. In this particular case, we're talking about a microbe. They're trying to get one of those to be fairly efficient, and usually they have the remnants or the beginnings of another couple. But they're not that efficient, and we wouldn't call them full senses by any stretch of the imagination. And this kind of life has variances of over time between what sense it does develop to what material it's going to metabolize. It's very fascinating. And what one type of life metabolizes and expels out, it takes in some energy and gives off a different kind, another kind of life can then use the kind that's being given out and metabolize that and give it back, or to give it to another type of life. It's a fascinating synergistic system that tends to be self-supportive pretty much. Some life forms, though, do create hardships on other life forms at times, because what they give out other life may be fatal or dangerous to other life forms as well. So we have to understand that this system is, on this planet, is very contentious. Now, there are other planets where that may not, and oftentimes is not, the case. But here, this is very much the case. We have a lot of contentious life forms to each other. Not all, but some are. Taken as a system, though, life is self-supportive, meaning that while some types of life are antithetical to other types of life, they, as far as a whole system of life, it is created in a way that supports itself. And the reason for that is because evolution is on its own, so to speak. It works through forces, and it works through chemistry and other things. But prior to evolution, there is the thought of a creator. The creator may not be the ultimate god of our universe. It may be something, some creator, a little less than that in development. But regardless of how you see it, there is thought that is involved in the system in order to keep the system viable and make it so that ultimately it is self-supported. Because if you just took a random model of evolution, it would be just, if not more likely, just as so, or even more likely, that the antithetical natures of life would be destructive to the system and cause the system to collapse and fail. But that isn't what we see on Earth, and it isn't the way life generally works. And the reason for that is there's a lot of thought behind the development of life. It isn't that life itself is being controlled, nor are the senses being manipulated, but there is a way of introducing something called ray energy that helps life to develop in a kind of logical and reasonable way. And there are other ways that beings greater than human beings can greatly affect the development of even the most basic of life, like microbial life. And then as life becomes even more advanced and developed, this thought that is imposed into the system is even more effective in helping it to become self-supporting and not destructive to itself. And if you think about that, and you certainly, I hope you will, I think you'll see that it's true. I think you'll see that it makes a lot of sense. Even if you're a diehard evolutionist, you may come to this conclusion if you really open your mind and look around and think about it some. Also, there have been mathematical models that support what I just said, done by some major universities who wanted to challenge the question of evolution in total. I say evolution works to some extent, but what they discovered is that there's got to be something other than just evolution at work somehow, because it would take five or more times longer for a lot of the evolutionary developments that we take for granted. And then there's a lot of glitches in evolution, but that's another fact. Nonetheless, evolution is a real thing, and it was designed by the Creator. So it isn't like, gee, evolution is outside of God. No, it's not. It's part of what God chose as a system on how to develop life. And again, there is, in the lower forms of life, forces at work to help each life form to develop more of some type of sense and a uniqueness in the way it develops its senses, so that ultimately the way that it metabolizes and the way that it expels energies and the way that it reproduces is unique over time to itself. The uniqueness of life is very important because God doesn't just grow from there being a numerical number or amount of life. God grows from the uniqueness of life. In other words, life is creative and unique in itself, and this causes God to be able to grow from eventually life adding to its own creator. Yeah. Sounds like a great system to me. I like that system, actually. I don't like a system where either there is a God that creates everything and just, you know, nothing has any choice, complete determinism. And I even more dislike a system, I think, that is completely random and things are just bumping into each other, and somehow we happen to have a system on Earth, anyway, that hasn't destroyed itself, which is pretty remarkable, and that is self-sufficient in terms of the system of life that has been created. Without there being any thought, anything else behind it, it just happened to work out that way. Yeah. Okay, if that were true, by the way, we will not probably discover life anyplace else, ever, because the chances of that happening are 1 in 10 quadrillion trillion to 1 that life could have survived here on this planet and gotten to the level that it has with that notion in mind. But if you want to believe that, that's okay. And if you disagree with me, you can call me. I'm right here, and I'm ready to hear from you if you want to talk about it. All right, so hopefully, we might have somebody online. I'm not sure. I heard a little beep in there. Who is that online?
Hi, Niall.
Hi, who is this?
Hi, my name's Rebecca, and I've been listening to your show. It's a great topic. I have a question. When you're talking about the different life forms,
sure.
For example, like the animal life form.
We haven't gotten to that yet.
You had mentioned that earlier.
Yeah.
The life form. Is once that life form grows, can it like pop out to a different life form, or does it stay in what group it's in? Does that make sense?
It makes a great deal of sense, Rebecca.
Okay.
Well, let me tell you my thoughts on that, and then you can tell me what you think about it. The general way that my understanding is how it works is that behind every type of life, there is a spiritual component. We'll call it a soul.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for animals, it's a soul of a whole group of types of animals,
mm-hmm.
and that soul has like a self-structure that thinks for the animals to some extent,
mm-hmm.
and produces kind of what we call instinct.
Uh-huh.
And eventually, life forms evolve beyond the soul that they exist within, and even the soul evolves. And so ultimately, life forms change from being in one way to another. And the spirit or soul part is the consciousness, really, of all of the species.
Mm-hmm.
So if we really want to think about what's evolving in animals, it's really probably the soul more than the animal itself.
Correct.
Because there could be millions of animals, but really a limited number of different souls for each subspecies and species of animal.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have a lot of different souls, so to speak, of maybe 20, 30, 50, 100 even different subspecies of an animal,
mm-hmm.
but that's still a very small number of souls compared to the actual number of animals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah.
Or what do you think?
It does. I had an animal pass over to the other side, and when we took a look at it, like, etherically, it was at this part had a lot of love that it took back to the soul part of the animal kingdom, and so it was taking back that to expand the consciousness of that soul.
Totally agree with that. Yeah, I would go with that completely. What kind of animal was it that left you?
It was a dog.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll just tell you something else I know about that. I think I know about it anyway. I've done some, we'll say, out-of-body traveling,
mm-hmm.
and in my experiences, what I've discovered is that animals like dogs actually live as much or more of in time and in experience of life in the next realm, the astral realm, than they did while they were physically alive. Many times they're adopted by people over there, sometimes people you may have even known before they went over to the other side, and they live a life there. So the animal continues on, but eventually exactly what you're saying happens, is that the love, the creativeness of that animal is added to the group soul. But dogs are special because they have so much contact with people. They're also growing from contact with us besides their soul. So they're not only getting just a self from their soul, they're getting kind of a self-structure from us, from humans.
Okay, so I don't really know about that interim piece. Actually, the way it was kind of given to me was it's either they just go back to the soul consciousness, or it's when you cross over to the other side, they'll be waiting for you there with your deceased friends and loved ones. But I didn't realize that could actually just kind of be part of a two-step process. You know, it seemed like it was either A or B. You know what
Well, it depends. Yeah, most animals actually, if they have contact with people, have a significant life on the other side. And amazingly, depending upon what part of the dimension of the astral world they go to, there's seven sub-dimensions. Okay. They go to one of the higher ones, they can live a life of amazing consciousness, in which they have limited ability to communicate in language with other animals and humans, and they can even resemble like children to some extent. I mean, we still know them as animals, but they take on a lot of characteristics that we would assume to be more childlike.
Mm-hmm.
So their consciousness actually expands considerably. And when they dream, unlike us, we dream through a lack of consciousness or a loss of consciousness, where animals actually, for the most part, depending upon the developmental stage of the animal and how advanced it is, can dream in a way in which they have expanded consciousness rather than limited consciousness,
mm-hmm.
as humans have.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a different experience than we do, but it's truly an amazing thing to see. I mean, they do, in my opinion, again, in my own experience, they do have an expanded life.
Oh, yeah, and it's wonderful the way the consciousness of the humans is waking up to the fact of this whole animal realm that have so much to offer us. They're just not this stupid, dumb thing that eats and you put outside in the rain. There's a whole lot more going on, and it's just so wonderful to see people waking up to that.
Yes, I agree. And how we treat our animals may be more important than how we even treat each other.
Yeah.
It's very important we recognize that, because they are, especially the pets we call pets, are actually, they're having an interconnection with us for us to help them to develop and become something more in themselves. That's part of our responsibility as having a pet.
Yes, yes it is. You mentioned the seven subconsciousness levels. Are those in your book as to what those levels are, or can I go on your website and find out what those are?
Well, you can go into either of the books. You can go into the textbook, which is Life's Hidden Meaning, and Chapter 8, it's like a book within a book. It's quite large, actually.
Okay.
But within that context, you can read about all of the sub-worlds of both the astral and the monastic worlds. But also, if you don't want to get into a heavy textbook like that is a lot of reading and difficult at times. There is a book I wrote called Afterlife Love, which is it's a story about some people I knew and their actual experiences, but it tells an awful lot about the astral world, and it's a lot easier to read, so you might want to check that one out, too.
I don't know
if anything on the website tells you about that stuff, though.
Is that the book that Rebecca's in?
That's the book that Rebecca's in, right.
You sent me that book. I was your first caller on your very first show, and you sent me that book, and you sent me the pictures of her and the other person, and it was fantastic. It was a fantastic book.
Oh, is it? Well, I'm glad you found it to be a fantastic book. You've read the whole book, then, I take it.
Oh, yeah. I sat down and just read it from cover to cover. It was quite something, especially what went on after one of them had passed on. It was truly great to read. I don't want to reveal much more, so people can go and get the book and read it themselves.
Well, then you know about the astral world, and you know that animals do have an expanded consciousness, because animals are covered extensively in that book, because I included most of the contacts I had with animals, and because I was director of a mental health institute some time ago, I also included some of the experiences that other people who were in this isolation tank that had experiences as well, so I included some of their experiences in there. And then, of course, the people you're reading about were real people.
Yes.
So their experiences are real as well. So
yes.
You're getting a really broad range of the different kinds of things that happen in the astral world in that one story, actually.
Yeah. I'm going to have to go back and read it, because I don't know when you first came on BBS, but that's when I got the book. I have another question about these different, like the animal world and then, you know, the human and all these different, I guess you call them, not species, but life forms.
Sure.
Do they ever overlap at all, so that the creator, maybe this would be something that doesn't even need to be known, so that the creator can get a similar experience from either one group or the other group?
Well, there is some overlapping in the fact that there are some animals that are so advanced that they live closer to being like people than as animals. And there are some people, unfortunately, that may be in the other direction who resemble more of the life of an animal than they do of a human being, because they deny their humanness by denying their recognition of their being a creator or being anything beyond the forces of nature around them, and they respond like animals to many situations.
But
also among animals, there is a lot of interconnectivity. And they have, if you look at how species develop, sometimes one species resembles a whole other set of species,
mm-hmm.
both in an evolutionary sense and in a spiritual one, too.
Okay, and my last question is, where do you get your information from? Are you downloaded, or it just...
Well, that's what I was saying earlier. I was in practice as a psychotherapist, but more importantly, I was director of a mental health institute that did experiments in out-of-body experiences by using a very sophisticated sensory isolation chamber and equipment, we'll say. And I used some of that and then eventually learned how to have out-of-body experiences. So most of what I talk about is through direct experience, some experimentation, because
uh-huh.
I'm a bit of a scientist, and I've been involved in several different disciplines of science. And then also in living here and trying to discipline myself spiritually so that I live a life that hopefully develops enough consciousness so I can understand things maybe
uh-huh.
a little better in some circumstances.
Uh-huh.
I'm not downloading anything exactly as much as I am having direct experience and figuring things out.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's a kind of a generic term, but I understand what you're saying. So, okay, well, it's great talking to you again, Niles. I love your show. It's great.
Well, I'm glad you're still listening, and I'm glad that you found the book a book of interest and value to yourself.
Yes, thank you so much. I should have gotten back to you and given you feedback and thanked you, and it's taken a long time, but it is really great, and I do appreciate it.
You're very welcome,
okay.
Rebecca.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, we're going to go to break right now, as a matter of fact, and we'll be back in just about 3 minutes.
What book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlouer.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Let me tell you about most supplements that help support joint health, movement, and ease. They usually contain a few helpful substances that work on some people moderately well. For many others, these levels of help are either not enough or are not helpful at all. But there is a product that contains 36 different high-potency and very effective ingredients that support overall joint health, movement, and ease when moving. It's Freedom of Movement by Alternative Health Approaches, and it works in many different ways. This formula is critically balanced to synergistically and dramatically improve joint movement through supportive health, and usually within several hours. The relief generally lasts for an entire day and over time can be permanent. Freedom of Movement comes with a money-back guarantee. Even shipping is refunded for the first bottle. This unique formulation has helped thousands to maintain joint health. The price is $24.95 for a 90-caplet bottle. It's available from Alternative Health Approaches at 800-777-7850. Give this powerful all-natural supplement a try if you haven't found relief from other sources. That's Freedom of Movement. Call 800-777-7850.
Well, we're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And we're having a show today dealing with the variability of life and how life really creates itself into something unique, both in this world and in other worlds. Now, we had a caller, so we may not quite get to other worlds today, but you know what? I think we can continue this show till next week, if we don't. So we can have like volume two of the show if you want. But let me continue on now. I was saying that beyond microbial life, eventually the microbial life has to develop itself into a more, we'll say, complex system. And when it does this, then instead of just having like a single cell with maybe a little bit of a couple of senses starting to develop, in one sense it's more dominant than another one, you get a whole bunch of cells that some of them represent sense in a life form that is unique to that group of cells, and then you have a much more developed chakra or center in electromagnetic form that is the actual, we'll call it the former, the creator of the sense, and then it becomes manifested within physical energy. That's how it really works. Now, the electromagnetic energy is much more sensitive and actually may provide a better sense to some particularly, we'll call them, first developing life forms than does even the physical sense. Many people discount that, but they may not realize that this is the case. And this is true of even plants. If you have plants around in your house or outside, they work as much on electromagnetic energy and sense as they do on physical. I mean, if you touch a plant, it may not get as much out of its sense in touching it physically as it does in you just being around it and picking up some of the electromagnetic radiation that your own aura is putting out. And then in addition to that, plants can, in a very basic way, pick up some feelings. Wow. And that comes from our feelings as well. So we can kind of exchange feelings to some extent with plants. Most people don't recognize this, though, because they don't see plants as really being as sentient as they really actually are. Okay, so as life forms are developing in this world and how they have developed in the past, they start developing one complete sense that is usually dominant in the way that they are unique. Sometimes you develop a second complete sense, or at least a part of it, and then they develop a partial sense that's in the astral realm, if particularly they're a plant or higher life form, higher than plants. And what this gives these life forms the ability of doing is exchanging energy not only in the etheric physical dimension, but also in the astral to some extent as well. The more energy that a life form can exchange and can metabolize through both its senses and other parts of its beingness so that it can move around and it can do things, it can take action, the more that it is actually completing or being creative towards its own creator. So this whole system has sort of a vertical and horizontal level of growth to it. And it's really fascinating. If we look at plants, we can say to ourselves, well, plants don't really seem like they're doing very much. But they're actually doing an amazing array of things. Amazing array of things. Plants are creating atmosphere. They are changing the structure chemically of the ground that they usually grow out of. And they are doing incredible amounts of things that are absolutely stupendous in terms of creatively growing themselves while they supply, oftentimes, the whole life system they exist in, a way for many other parts of life to continue to grow. That doesn't mean that some plants aren't dangerous or poisonous or nasty in some respects, but it means that, taken as a whole, each plant is contributing something that keeps the whole system alive, even if it in some ways is nasty towards some other plants or animals. It's very fascinating, very fascinating. And, of course, microbial life is intimately involved with any life that is more advanced in itself. And it is supplying important elements to even the more advanced life in most circumstances. There are rare circumstances where microbial life may not do that because it just doesn't have much contact with anything other than other microbial life. But in this world as it is at the present level, most microbial life is intimately involved with other life. Fascinating. And again, this is how life is developing diversity. It's filling all of the various spaces around us that normally life would find it difficult to live in, and yet life is finding ways to be creative and to grow into these areas and to make this world and every other world this takes place on, which is every world that is a dense world at least, and into a realm in which eventually the creator will be more expressed. I can tell you this. One of the things that you can tell about life is that when it's creating more of its creative, the environment around it becomes more beautiful. By our own standards, by human standards, we would call it more beautiful. Because the life, by creating more life, is producing tremendously beneficial effects. I think we have another caller online. Who is this?
Hey, Niles, it's Rebecca calling back again.
Hi.
In talking about the life forms, maybe if not this show, at another show, could you talk about the dangers of genetic engineering? I'm assuming...
How about next week? We're going to do volume two or number two of the show. Can you listen in next week?
You bet. That'll be awesome. I just live about 12 miles from a place that does genetic engineering for vegetables.
Oh. Well, we'll talk about that.
Awesome.
I'll tell you what, give me a call next week and bring it up and remind me as well.
Awesome. Okay, thanks.
Sure.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, so life is a system that generally one of the ways we, in a very non-scientific but very, very, we'll say, effective way to know if a system is working or not, when life systems are working, the environment becomes more and more beautiful. And when life systems are not working, they tend to start losing their level of beauty. Now, I define beauty as an improvement in one's sense by experiencing something outside of themselves that projects or creates beauty. So in other words, if your senses are improved by observing or by tasting or by feeling or however something else, that something else has some level of beauty. If your senses are the opposite. If they are depreciated by experiencing something else, then it lacks beauty. Huh. That's my definition. I find it works for me, too. All right, so life really has an amazing role to play because it's we can even see it around us as how it's supposed to be working. Plants play a very important role in being supportive to virtually everything that grows beyond them in development. So that would be animal life and human life. But also, they even support the microbial system. They support everything around them, even below them. So plants are really an incredible life form in the sense that they have this basic element that they live in two dimensions at the same time, yet they also are unique in how they do that by developing one sense over another in a unique and different way, and by combining which senses they're going to use and which ones are not. Now, plants do not have anywhere near the amount of sense that animals do, and of course they are missing one of the key elements that animals have, and that's the ability through their own thought to create movement. They cannot create movement through just having some thought that goes through them and then make a choice and go in a certain direction. They move, but they move only as is directed by the thought of their group soul, the spiritual part of them, and only as they are created within their sense and within the structure of their genetics, etc. So they can't really just willfully go marching down the block and shake hands with you because they are missing that key element. In order to have that, by the way, they would require more senses growing more together at the same time because that's the difference between animals and plants. Animals have the ability to animate or move themselves, and they have this ability because they have enough sense and enough thought to produce the effect. Well, I have a lot more to say about this, and unfortunately, we're just about out of time for me to say it all. So I'm going to let you all know that on Sunday, November 25th, which is coming up this Sunday, I'm going to be on 1170 a.m. out of Boston, Massachusetts. And if you're anywhere in the northeastern part of the country, you can hear me at 1170 a.m. or you can hear me on WDISAM.com radio. And if you're going to be listening, it'll be at 1 o'clock to 2 o'clock, that's Pacific Standard Time. Or if you're, of course, in Eastern Coast time, it would be 4 to 5. And this week I'm going to be talking about how to live more as a soul right now. So that's what you're going to be listening to if you call, not call in, if you tune in. And you can tune in directly if you're on the East Coast, or you can listen anywhere that you have internet radio, with WDISAM.com. All right, so that takes care of that. Now, let me kind of summarize today's show. Got another couple minutes here to do that. And then we'll go ahead and complete the show next week with more detail on how life diversifies. But just for today's show, the very basics of life is that life diversifies through the development first of sense. And sense comes through centers, which some people call chakras, and the very basic element of life is to develop first one and then maybe two or three chakras that become interrelated and balanced and allow the life to become more and more interactive with its environment, to take in energy and to give out energy in ways that are unique to that particular kind of life. So that each kind of life develops a place where it can live, a niche that it can live in, and allow itself to become a creator, co-creator even, with its creator. And there's a part of life that is spirit or spiritual. And that part of life we call a soul, but it's a group soul, meaning that it's a soul for maybe millions of life forms, but it helps those life forms to stay alive by giving it basic understandings of how to do that through what we call instincts. Human beings do not have group souls, by the way, but But we'll talk more about that next week. Well, I hope this has been interesting to all of you, and I hope that you'll tune in next week when I continue on with this vast subject, and we will talk about life in other worlds, other planets, next week as well, because we'll have enough time to do that. So until next week, this has been Niles McClower for Why Life Is.